You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It is The Dice Men Cometh! It is.
It is.
The 26th of April. It is Anzac Day Eve. It is Australia's number one. No, it's post Anzac Day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anzac Day, Boxing Day?
The day after Anzac Day.
Well, that's all right. Look, apart from that start, we are the Dice Men Cometh, which is Australia's leading, yes, leading tabletop board gaming, radio show, and podcast that talks about all thing dice, all thing meeples, all things role playing, all things cardboard. And everything else, don't we, Mark?
We do. That's what we do. Actually, I've always wondered, who's Australia's trailing board game podcast, do you think?
Oh.
Let's not dwell on that for too long.
No, I like to think we have no competition whatsoever.
Just
definitely at the first.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. Now, what have we got on this week, which is episode 210?
Oh, this week we're going to talk about a game, what you two gents played lately.
We did.
A game of zombies and minis and other type of things.
It was enormous.
I'm going to talk about something that you gents probably aren't aware of because you're certainly not members of Mensa. That's the Mensa Select Games.
And you're a member, Mark, are you?
No, I'm not.
Oh,
but okay. I got on a website and I found out stuff. And then, Garth, you're going to tell us about what's happening in the world of iOS board game apps, that is, board game apps for your devices.
Yes, that's right. We haven't talked about that for a while.
We haven't.
And we won't be iOS-centric. We might mention you Android scum.
Sif.
No, we might. We'll see how we go. But look, we are going to start, as we do so often, by saying thank you to our sponsors, Area 52.
Absolutely.
Now, it is International Tabletop Day coming up on Saturday, chaps. Are we excited?
Yes.
I'm
going to spend my entire day playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes. Well, we will make a little post of a photo here, but Leon has come into the show and he's brought his DM screen, so I feel like we're about to roll for initiative, but instead we are going to go to a song. And then we will come back and Leon,
hey, don't
primarily,
look behind the screen.
You're not allowed to look behind the screen.
That's like looking in my pants.
I hope it's not.
I think the screen's a bit bigger than that. But anyway, let's throw to a song. We are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And here is a song.
And you could probably look at my pants if you asked nicely. I don't really mind. Just not behind the screen. I don't do forgiveness. Your God on my
hit list. HTML Flowers.
It was.
Got it out eventually. Got on my hit list here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We talk board games, card games, role-playing, minis, anything that you sort of play on a tabletop or around it. And you two gents got together without me.
Because we're invited.
I said I couldn't make it. To play a game.
We did indeed. And I'm going to tell you what that game is. Right now.
Awesome.
Oh, that was so smooth, Leon.
Blinded by its own desire and disregard, humankind has doomed itself. Now, that's just an actual fact. Now I'm going to get into the actual fiction of the story of this game. Now, zombies roam the ruins of our world. A couple of months have passed since the initial outbreak. You're a team leader of the resistance. Humanity and zombies are locked in a war of extinction. It is time to engage in zombie side.
Ooh.
Yes, we're finally talking about that. So, Zombicide, the original, was created by Guillotine Games and published by Cool Mini or Not. You may have heard of them. This is the first project from both of those companies back in 2012. All those in board gaming years, that's like a lifetime ago.
Sure is.
And was a smash hit on Kickstarter, racking up $781,000 from around 5,000 backers, which in 2012... Yeah. Is humongous.
That would be massive.
I didn't look into it, but it probably wouldn't surprise me if it was the biggest board game at the time to ever be on Kickstarter.
And it's now what the Hellboy release has got in about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much. Either way, so the game itself is a co-op survival adventure board game. It's set with a modern zombie theme for 1 to 6 players where you are heroes, you play to complete various missions like finding supplies, rescuing citizens, destroying locations, all while trying to fight off the encroaching zombie horde, which is what all the kids want to do these days.
Well, damn right. They want to kill them damn zombies because they are so brainwashed by The Walking Dead and Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And Dawn of the Dead.
iCarly. No, iZombie. And
iCarly.
It was one of those iShows.
Well, that's that credibility out the window. Anyway, so that was the original. And then they moved on swiftly to Prison Break, which was the standalone season two of Zombicide. Now, that one added in all the expansions that I'm going to mention. They all add new characters, new missions, new locations. But Prison Break especially, it added berserker zombies, which were all crazy and whatnot. And then that one had a small expansion itself called the Toxic City Mole, which added toxic zombies as well as zombie heroes.
Okay.
So if your heroes get killed, they can still kind of fight along. They're not completely, you know, horrible things at the moment. Then Season 3 came along, which again was another standalone called Rue Morgue, which let you play in teams. You could split up and kind of compete against each other while still killing the old zombies. That came with a small expansion called Angry Neighbors, which added sidekicks. So, and in those games, there was too numerous to mention different monster packs you could buy and character packs. You could buy things like a Bruce Willis from Die Hard figure, which of course wasn't called that.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Yes, one that was based off Machete, Sylvester Stallone, Mila Jovovich, the entire cast of Big Bang Theory, just to name a few. Now, collectively,
I think I'd like to see the whole cast of Big Bang Theory eaten by zombies.
Yeah, so would I. Now, collectively, those three games, 26,213 backers.
Yep.
And raising $5,885,679.
Okay.
So not too bad.
Not too bad for a weekend.
Yeah, so that was over the span of a few years. But then, out of nowhere, death, injustice, plague, and war. Again, just a fact. Common things these days, but nothing prepared us for zombies. Let's get medieval. Yeah, that's right.
Exclamation mark.
When we got our hands on Zombicide Black Plague, the fantasy version of this game. So not set in the modern era, but set way back. Well, it's not even set way back when because it is fictional.
Oh, like Rising Sun. Oh, no, Rising Sun was factitional, wasn't it?
Yes. I believe that was the word they used. Anyway, yes. So as I said before, all the previous Zombicides put together, 26,000 backers. Zombicide Black Plague, 20,915 backers by itself.
Yeah.
For a total of over $9 million.
What?
Sorry, nine. Four. I don't know why I said nine. $4 million.
So if you join the top of the four across, it sort of looks a bit
well,
like
it's
a nine.
79,000. I think I just saw the nine and got excited. Either way. And that also came with a little expansion. I say little. It was quite a large expansion itself, which is called Wolfsburg, which added zombie wolves and zombie werewolves. And again, all extra tiles and characters and all this kind of stuff. So if you've ever seen a zombie side game, which I'm sure everyone that listening has. You've got all these tiles and you've got all these minis, your good guys, your bad guys, you're moving around the board doing all your kind of things. But also, it is the kind of the dictionary definition of what a board game Kickstarter is these days, in the sense that if you go to a retail store right now to buy Zombicide Black Plague, the base game comes with six characters. It's a 1-6 player game, so you would use all the characters in the box.
Yeah, all those heroes, which is amazing. Six, that's awesome.
Yeah, the Kickstarter version of Zombicide Black Plague, without spending anything else, getting any other expansions, anything, just with the Kickstarter exclusives, 41 characters.
Wow.
So an extra 35 characters. There was also 10 guest packs you could buy for $20 US each, which had four characters in them.
It was probably actually cheaper than the retail version as well. That happens these days.
Yes, so you would have 80-odd characters, but to buy all those extra guest packs, you would be looking at a whole lot of money, more than an actual retail version of the game itself. And some of the characters that they had in there was they had Grom and Talia from the Conan world. They had Ash and Evil Ash from Army of Darkness and very other kind of fantasy homages and tropes and whatever else, as well as their own original characters.
Mm-hmm.
So now, the game itself. First, I'm going to mention the fact that it has one of the best, if not the best, awesome player boards that you can get in any game.
Yeah, Zombicide, no. Zombicide Black Plague,
yes.
Yes.
Okay. Zombicide was just the character sheets were just really massive kind of cardboard, half-assed character sheets themselves and in player boards, whereas in this one, you actually get a plastic player board that you can put any character card into, and there's a little tracker down the bottom which tracks your experience, which clicks along ever so nicely. It's also got all perfect slots for your weapons, your armors, your spell, all your extra equipment standing up right there, and you can see everything, and it's just so pretty.
It is, and we love having lots of slots Lots and lots of slots for all the stuff that you can have your weapons equipped, you can have your backpack ready to go, you can have your spare stuff ready to trade. You need to track that XP for reasons that no doubt Leon will talk about. And to have it so easily accessible is just awesome.
Yeah, and as I said, the experience tracker clicks along very nicely. It's quality material, and the little pegs that go in the different slots for different experience and upgrades and stuff, they all go in and out really nice. So it seems like a silly thing, but everyone that's played the original Betrayal at House on the Hill knows those little clips and goes, you'd be surprised how much something this small can ruin a game. So that is absolutely quality. The base game of Black Plague came with 10 quests. And they had various different things you were doing. You were doing things like trying to escape an area or killing specific amount of enemies or killing a specific like boss character itself, finding artifacts, rescuing villagers, all that kind of stuff. And in the book, they all tell you the difficulty of each scenario, roughly how long it should take, and a recommended amount of players for that scenario. Speaking of players, I should recommend say something that is very similar to the Eldritch Horror board game in that never ever... ever, ever play this game or Eldritch Horror with an odd number of characters. Even if you have an odd number of people, say three people playing, get someone to use a fourth character or all of you use a fourth character because the game scales 1 to 2, 3 to 4, 5 to 6. Okay. Eldritch Horror does the same thing, and Eldritch Horror does 7 to 8 as well. So if you have three players in this, you get the exact same amount of bad guys and all that kind of stuff coming out as if you had four players.
So you're at a disadvantage if you play with three.
Exactly. So always use an even amount of characters.
It must be said that you can play with odd people, just not an odd number.
Yes, exactly. But the fact that that even still exists in this day and age is kind of utterly ridiculous, really.
Well, if they're going to scale it, you think they should properly scale it?
I would just quite easily say you play this with six. And the reason you play it with six is because it is just so much fun to see all these zombie minis on the board at one time, and you want to share that stuff with your friends.
Well, I could be wrong in that you may actually have to play some of these scenarios with six, because I think I did see a video which had two people playing and they had three characters each.
Yeah, wow.
So maybe that is the way it goes.
That was the biggest question for me is, with so many games, when you max out the player count, you start to really push the edge of the envelope for player time. Like, it takes a lot more because you're waiting for five more people to have their go before it comes back to your turn.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to hear in your discussion, not necessarily right now, but in your discussion, how the playtime goes.
Well, the game itself is not difficult. I think it's a game that once you've now... I played it once, what did we play it, two, three nights ago? And it was on the weekend, five nights ago.
That's right.
I think you could put the board in front of me now, and I probably wouldn't know the setup off the top of my head, obviously, because that's in the book, but I think I could explain the rules to somebody without breaking a sweat.
Go on then, I dare you.
No, I'm not going to explain all the rules, because that would be boring. But yes, so the heroes characters, you have your hero's turn, then you have your zombie's turn. Your hero's turn, you can do things like move, not diagonally, just orthogonally. You can open doors when you do that. New zombies spawn in a... If there's a house that has five rooms, you turn over a zombie card, and whatever it says on there, that's what zombies spawn in each of those rooms. Yeah. So if you're going to open a big building, be prepared that there's going to be some big trouble in there.
But you could also fail epically to open the door and just create noise and draw zombies towards you.
Yes.
And you're still going to open the door because you weren't able to be strong enough.
Yes, that may have happened once or all the time. You can search, which there's a lovely little search deck there, which is where you get all your really cool equipment stuff. The stuff you start off with basically is a bit, I mean, it does the job, it'll kill a zombie, but not many of them and not very easily.
Yeah.
So you can search and get all sorts of fantasy accoutrements. You can. Thank you.
Do you mean studying English?
Not recently, no.
Well, I noticed the designers of the game are French, Leo. So they may even be listening.
Well, then there you go.
Oui.
Bonjour. You can trade with other people in the same spot as you to give them equipment or take stuff from them. You can attack, which is fairly obvious. You attack a zombie, you
smash the things.
Yep, you use a melee weapon or a ranged weapon that you have. You roll a die, and don't you?
Well, look, yes. Every player will always have three actions on their turn.
Yes,
moving is simply it costs an action to move from a square to another square. Yep. That's simple. Yeah, the attacking depends on your weapons. So you'll be able to equip up to two weapons, depending on if they are single-handed or double-handed weapons. Sometimes you'll be able to have a shield. But, yeah, attacking is very simply, you roll the number of dice that you're allowed to. the weapons that you're holding have a success score on them, so you need to roll that number or above. Whatever you roll, generally you will get kills because most of the zombies have one hit point. So you do a success and you will definitely kill stuff. There are certain rules that go along with you will kill this type of zombie before the next type because there are bog-standard walking ones, there are running ones, there are the adequately named fatties, and then there are the abominations, which are virtually impossible to kill at the start of the game, which is why searching is so bloody important.
Yes, and then there's, you pretty much named them all there, Garth, except the final one is necromancers, which I'm going to talk about in a minute because they're a very important part of the game. You can also do special objective actions on your turn, so depending on what the objective of the game is, you might have to do special actions there. You also, as Garth mentioned, when you attack, you make noise. So when that happens, when zombies see you and on their turn, they will automatically move towards whatever hero they can see. However, if somebody makes enough noise and they can't, you're not being seen directly, the zombies will move towards the noise. So they always give you somewhere for them to move, which is good because there's sometimes games are confusing where they say it moves to the nearest person. Like, well, they're equal distant and you get to choose, but that's not really fair. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, we had a couple of situations where the zombies had no line of sight to anybody and all of the players were sort of paired up. There was two characters on this spot, two characters on this, and two characters on this one. But there were situations where the noise tokens were the breaking the tie factor. And look, that can be a really good thing, but if you're the player that the zombies are all coming to, that can be a really bad thing because I don't know if you've got a number there, Leon, but there is a crap load of zombie minis that this game has.
Yes, I don't have the number, but it is quite a lot.
It's probably because numbers don't go that high.
No, it's in the triple figures, I think you'll find.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and on the zombie's turn, there will be various different locations, zombie spawn points on the game board. You'll flip over a card for them, and then whatever is on that card, you'll spawn that many zombies there, depending on the type of them, and then you'll move them up to their movement and attack if they're in a right square to attack. So the abominations, as Garth mentioned before, they have 3 hit points to kill. And with this game, the hit points don't last for other rounds. You need to kill something in one go or not at all. But the thing is, which is something that I do not like about this game, is that you can have, say, a sword that you roll 5 dice for. And if you're in a square with 5 zombies that all have 1 hit point, and you get 5 successes, you will hit each of them once and kill them all, right? So 5 points of damage you've basically done, spread across
them.
Yes. If you're in a square with an abomination and you have that same sword, you can't actually kill it because you need to be able to do 3 damage in a single blow to kill it.
With a single weapon.
Same as the fatties.
With a single roll, with a single
thing. As the fatties, you can't use 3 rolls of a dice. You need to spend 2 damage from a weapon that does 2 damage to get it in one roll.
So you can't use the same, if you rolled it and did 5 points of 5 hits, no, that doesn't count as 5 points.
If you're
of
in
damage.
A square with an abomination and you had that specific sword, you just flat out wouldn't attack it because you can't.
Right. So you'd be doing one lot of damage 5 times, and because it resets each time.
Yeah. So look,
that's strange.
It's strange and a bit silly. And to be fair, no offense to Mark who taught us, I wouldn't mind actually going through the rules myself to see if that's right or not because I didn't like that at all, and
Look, it is, as far as I'm aware, it is completely true, and the reason it says that I believe it's true is because in the rules it goes, at the start of the game, you cannot kill abominations.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
The only way you can kill abominations is by getting the right equipment, and that's why this game is so much about the searching.
Yeah. So that's why you've got to go and find the chainsaws and the hand grenades and all that sort
of
thing.
Well, not in medieval times.
There's only a couple of weapons.
What?
There's
no medieval chainsaws?
No, not that we saw, but you never know.
That's fantasy medieval.
There's only a couple of weapons that are strong enough to take down an abomination. When I say a couple, I do literally mean a couple.
Yes.
But there are these, what were they called? Dragonfire? Dragonfire, basically, which were like, it was like oil. You'd throw them into a square, and then that square for the rest of the game would have that dragon oil on it. If abomination goes in there and you had some sort of light source from a torch or from a flaming sword or flaming arrow, you could shoot it into there and boom, they're gone. That's the main way you get rid of them. So when we first played, I think the second game we played, because the first one we got slaughtered.
Yes.
The second one, we didn't win either, but we lasted a lot longer. The second one, I think we spawned an abomination like straight away in the first house we went to, which is next to our starting area, and just went, well, that we can't go in there. And there was an objective in there we had to get. So like we can't go past him because he's just going to hit us and smack us around. So that is rather annoying. Also, there's something very important I need to say about this game. There was a rule in the original Zombicide game all three seasons of it that I cannot believe exists, but apparently it does, is that in Zombicide, when you shoot a ranged weapon, which most of them would be, because lots of people have guns these days, if you shoot that into a room, and in that room there is one of your allies and a whole bunch of zombies, you would roll the attack dice first to see if you hit your allies. And if that missed, then you would roll to see if it hit the zombies. Yeah, that was in all three original seasons of Zombicide, that rule. Yes. Firing a ranged weapon, you would roll to see if you hit your companions first.
It might make sense to me if you're firing an M60 or a minigun or something like that, where you're spraying bullets everywhere.
I think maybe you could get like a sniper rifle that would mean you negate that, but normal everyday ranged weapons, which, and that rule, utterly ridiculous. That rule is the rule that that put me and many people off even wanting to play it, let alone buy it. Mm-hmm. In this one, however, there is a variation on that rule. It's still kind of there, but not really. Because you roll the die for your ranged attacks to see if they hit. If they hit the zombies, then they kill them first. However, if you miss and another character of yours is in that square, then it can hit them.
Now, that makes sense.
Yes, that makes perfect logical sense.
So many times.
Especially for arrows.
That's right. You're going to have like one or two characters in a room with 10 zombies. It's got to be way more likely you're going to eat a zombie.
Exactly. So, look, let's move on to this. Look, it's not XP. It's like your zombie kill trackathon 3000 thing at the bottom of these player aids. Because this is where this game goes from being basically stupid smash them up, kill the zombies, smash things in the face game to a little bit of spreadsheet data work because basically what you're trying to do is make sure that every one of the six players around the table kills exactly the same number of zombies, kinda, so that they all level up in almost exactly the same turn. Because the way it works is you all start in your blue zone, which is your noob zone, you know, I might be able to kill a zombie, rah. Then you go up into the, yellow zone, and then orange, and then red, which is your bloodlust. Now, as soon as any one player moves from one zone to the other, when you then flip the zombie deck, all of the zombies will spawn based on the number of the highest character.
Yes.
Now, that is really tough because, there are lots of zombies to kill, but there are also objectives that you need to try and resolve, and you might have people who are either have found the right equipment, so they're better to go and be the guards and smash the zombies, and there might be people who have got more movement, or they might just have a better door-opening ability or something to that effect. So it doesn't necessarily work well when you're trying to define certain roles for each player. You all need to do everything, and you all need to kind of do it evenly.
Yeah, because it is completely and utterly co-op, 100%, even though some characters might screw each other out of experience
Not
points.
Not characters, but players, Oren Winter.
Yes, and then who did it back to him?
I did it to him first.
Yes.
And but then it doesn't matter. He did it to me when it was
And then
really
I did it
important.
To one of you later just for the hell of it. but we found in both the games that we played that kind of happened. In the first game, it was me. In the second game, it was Georgie, where you kind of get left behind, that if your character doesn't get the right searched equipment and you're not really that good at killing zombies, you find that like people just plow ahead of you in the experience and stuff. So we ended up having to kind of go to Georgie in the second game, especially, you go and get this objective to get yourself some experience, because we were like right, I think we were all in the yellow by that point, and she was still halfway in the blue, which made it really difficult for her, because generally the first expansion power you get is an extra action or something really important like
Correct.
That. Because every time you go up a level, the reason you want to do it is because you get extra actions and special abilities and whatnot. So the final thing I'm going to mention before we wrap up and give our thoughts about it is the necromancers. So the necromancers are a new thing to Black Plague, obviously, because necromancers tend not to exist these days, only back in those days.
You'd be surprised, Leon. You obviously are not hanging out the same sort of places that I am.
Oh, well, there you go, you weirdo. So, the necromancers, they create more spoins?
Some spoin points.
They create some more spoin points for necromancers specifically, and the way that you can actually lose a game is that when the necromancers spawn, they will try and then escape out of the closest possible normal zombie spawn point. They won't move towards your characters or noise like every other zombie. They will move towards that spawn point. And if they get out and there is six spawn points on the map, or this was the scenario we played anyway, then you would lose.
Insta-lose.
So you have to kind of hunt them down and take them out. So they're like the generals. You've got to take them out as well as doing all your other objectives.
But you also want to kill them as quickly as possible, because the last thing you need on this board is more zombies spawning. Because, look, let's talk about our second game.
Yeah.
basically everyone died.
Yeah. Okay.
And when everyone died, I was still at full health. And the reason I was at full health is because I had the heaviest of heavy crossbows, which could kill abominations. Not that I did. But I also had these amazing swords, which allowed me to kill generally four zombies every single time. So I was able to cut a swathe through these zombies, just carving them left and right. But then we got to a critical mass where there were six spawn points. Spawn points.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran out of zombies. Now, in Zombicide, yes, which is several boxes full of zombies, that was bad to run out of zombies.
Yes, and then one of my points I was going to bring up, which is ridiculous. I've actually got it written down here, and I'll read while I got it written down here.
Okay.
If you run out of minis, the game is over. But you can buy more of all the minis in the game if you want to keep in your game box. Cha-ching. Which means it's play to win, which is bollocks.
Pay to win.
It's kind of like every video game now.
Multiplayer ones, hence I don't play them. Because, yeah, that is absolute nonsense. But that's the game in itself. Like I said, that's all we explained then pretty vaguely. That's how the game is played.
Hey, Leon.
Yes.
I just pulled up this little, talking of spreadsheets and graphs, this little spreadsheet on Board Game Geek about player numbers. Would you believe 63% of people who voted what's the best player number for this game voted 3?
I reckon that's because they're all doing two characters each.
Going to say it must be, because then the next highest is 6.
Yes.
So I agree, because when you look at recommended for 3 is the lowest number, which is really strange. So clearly, as you said, playing with 3 people just means you play two characters each.
Which is fun, because this does have player elimination.
Yeah.
Now, it also is important to note that your players, your characters are really squishy. Mm. They can go from full health to be dead in like that.
Which only, it's only 3 hits and you're gone.
Correct. And every zombie, if you're in the square with the same one and you have no defenses, they will automatically do an attack. You will die in one go. So, look, I really had fun.
Mm.
I wouldn't play it every day, and it's certainly not the thinkiest game that you're ever going to play, but it's fun. It's stupid. It uses up an hour and a half of your time. The hardest part about it is setting it up and finding your bloody character if you've got the Kickstarter version, because there are so many heroes to try and choose from.
Yeah, well, that's one of my main, not necessarily issue, it's more that if you're interested in these games, you've got to get on Kickstarter, because I will never own this game because the retail version's got 6 characters in it. The Kickstarter one has got 50-odd characters in it, and I'll never own that because to get that now is going to cost me hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
You've got to get a new version.
You've got to get it back at when it first comes out, because I couldn't live with a game that only had 6 characters knowing there's like 50 out there.
Exactly.
That's not the kind. I think when most people in this hobby kind of have that mentality in their
head.
Well,
we're all completionists in some way. Look, so there is Zombicide Invader.
Yes, before I mention that, I was just going to mention that Green Horde, which is the first big expansion for Black Plague, has already been on Kickstarter and funded. Pretty much the same principle. Normally a couple of characters in the retail, but this one's got heaps. That, 27,000 backers, 7,000 more backers than the normal Black Plague itself, and that one did raise $5 million. Jeez. And in that game, it adds a trebuchet, which is a cool, pretty big mini, but also, Garth, we found this game probably relatively challenging, I'd like to say. The orcs deal more damage than the normal zombies.
Oh, good.
They do twice as much damage, which is, oh, my God. And the final thing I've got here before we talk about Invaders, Invasion, which is on there now, which is the sci-fi version, I've got written down here, any game that is a mini-based game that has scenarios in it, why, in the name of all that is good and unholy, no campaign? Why?
Yeah.
You could pay some 16-year-old amateur fantasy writer to link these scenarios together, and I'm not expecting Shakespeare, let's go with Tolkien levels of detail here in the campaign, but give me some reason. That's why I haven't bought a lot of scenario games off Kickstarter, because I just don't think I would play them, really. Yeah. The only reason I bought the Batman one is because it's Batman, and I'm assuming someone will come up with a good homebrew campaign, or even they'll do it
themselves. I would be very surprised if this doesn't have those sort of campaigns somewhere on BGG. There's got to be a scenario.
But why on earth would they not do it, though?
Because the minis are what sells it. And the thing is, this game, like Ticket to Ride and Carcassonne and Catan, people just buy all the versions of it.
Mm.
It's the same bloody game. The setting is different, and they just buy it because you see people with their shelfies, and they have boxes all and boxes and boxes of Zombicide. They just love it. And look, it's simple to teach. It's easy to play. It's a bit of fun. It's not going to stick with you for longer than the gameplay.
No.
But you'll have fun around the table. I would always suggest play it at the full play account. But look, we do have to move on. Mm-hmm. Anyone want to have a final word on this one before we wrap it up?
I did enjoy it. I'm glad they changed that long range rule because that was ridiculous.
It was stupid.
I would happily play it again. But if you want to play any of these games and are interested in owning one, Kickstarter is where you've got to do it.
Exactly right. And go on there now because there is that zombie side.
The sci-fi version.
And I haven't played any of them. And after what you've told me, I've still got no desire to play them. They're just the typical minis fest, masses of minis, shorter play time where it's just kill, 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 kill. I'd rather spend my time playing something like Gloomhaven, where there's at least a bit of thinking involved.
Exactly. And all the missions are kill, 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 kill. Anyway, where the Dice Men Cometh, it's Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is a song. They're still going. That was Wolf Alice with Yuck Foo. They are neither Tasmanian nor Australian, but the Dice Men Cometh are both of those things, which is who you're listening to on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark.
Garth.
You want to tell us about your recent experience not being a member of Mensa?
Absolutely.
Go but for it.
First, let me give you a little bit of a history lesson, perhaps.
Okay.
Mensa is the largest and oldest high IQ society in the world. That's why none of us really know any of this. It's a non-profit organisation open to people who score...
That's not very smart.
...at the 98th percentile or higher on a standardised, supervised IQ or other approved intelligence test.
Yeah,
so top 2%.
I'm just outside of it. Honestly, I am. You wouldn't believe it,
okay.
But I am.
That's all right.
I've taken that test.
Mensa
is that with the BuzzFeed quiz you also did about which lasagna are you?
Shut up. No, it was a legitimate thing. I'm proper smart, all right?
Right. So Mensa formally comprises national groups and the umbrella organisation Mensa International.
The umbrella organisation?
Yeah.
They're creating zombies.
Now, the word Mensa is a Latin word meaning table, and I'm not sure why, but that's what their logo is. It's a table.
Okay.
Don't know. But it's to do with the coming together of equals around the table, as in equals much higher than everyone else. Now, the funniest thing is it was started by
John Mensa,
an Australian, Roland Berrell, a lawyer, smart ass, and Dr. Lancelot Ware, a British scientist and also a lawyer. They founded it at Oxford in 1946 because they had the idea of forming a society for very intelligent people, the only qualification being you're having a high IQ. So it was meant to be non-political and free from all other social distinctions. And then American Mensa was the second major branch of Mensa set up. Now, the original founders, Berrell and Ware, were very disappointed with the resulting society because they had intended it to be an aristocracy of the intellect. Mm. So stuck-up people got upset when lower-class smart people came along.
Okay.
There you go. Because they were unhappy to, quote, a majority of Mensans seem to come from humble homes.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. What on earth has this got to do with tabletop games?
Well, then Dr. Lancelot Ware also commented, I get disappointed that so many members spend so much time solving puzzles.
Oh.
And there we have our segue into Mensa Select. It's an annual award given by the American branch, the lesser-known branch, of Mensa since 1990 to five board games every year that are original, challenging, and well-designed. And they're presented annually at their Mensa Mind Games competition, where Mensa members go and have a big gaming convention that only smarty bloodfasts get to play. Now, you may have seen these games come up in the past where it's been announced the games that won and sort of scratch your head and gone, huh? So in 1990, the very first year, here are the five highbrow Mensa Select games. Taboo.
What?
Scattergories.
Mm-hmm.
Trivial Pursuit. Genius Edition.
Well, yeah.
They couldn't even spell genius.
No. Tribond and Abalone. Very, very exciting games from 1990. And we know there were games around then, but look, I'll go forward a few years. In 1994, Magic the Gathering was on the list. In 1995, the most highbrow of card games, that we play around the dinner table at BorderCon, the great Dal Muti.
Oh, there you go.
Was on the list.
You do have to count to be able to play it.
And in 1999, such gaming luminaries as Apples to Apples and Flux were in the top five board games. Moving forward to 2006, we saw Hive and Wits and Wages appear on the list. 2009, notice there was nothing between 7 and 8 because I didn't know any of those games.
Right.
2009, Dominion made the list.
Not surprised.
2010, Forbidden Island appeared on the list. 2011, we had Pirate versus Pirate and Uncle Chestnut's Table Gipe. Have you heard of those classics?
Yeah, definitely.
2012, skip that year. 2013, Forbidden Desert.
Yep.
And the little game called Suburbia.
Suburbia was probably the first game where I was made aware of the Mensa Select Awards.
And then the next year, there were five games, as I said. It was The Duke. You may or may not have heard of that one. Euphoria.
Yep.
By Stonemaier Games. Gravwell, Escape from the Ninth Dimension. Mm-hmm. And a couple other games with X on the end, which are clearly like puzzle-type games. And so really what you were seeing is the more puzzly, abstract, mainstream games. Now,
Flux, yeah.
Yeah, part of the reason for that is the game designers, the game publishing companies have to submit their games to be part of this affair, and they have to give six copies to be present at that Mind Games special. So that explains, I guess, a lot of why you haven't seen games that we would be playing, like where's Catan? Where's Carcassonne? Those sort of things that have never been on these lists. But moving forward, in 2015, you know that old Bezier games are onto a good thing because Castles of Mad King Ludwig made it in the 2015 list, along with Lanterns, the Harvest Festival. In 2016, Bezier games had another one, Favour of the Pharaoh. I haven't played that one.
No.
And also New York 1901 and World's Fair 1893. I guess Mensa people like numbers.
No.
In 2017, I remember us talking about this one, particularly because Clank made the list, as did Harry Potter's Hogwarts Battle.
Hmm.
But then there's still games like Amalgam. Have you heard of Amalgam?
No.
I thought that was what the dentist used in your tooth, but that's only an old-timey dentist. But this year, I think this is the year, gentlemen, where the Mensa Select Society Games thingy has come into the modern world.
I don't think Mensa people are allowed to say thingy.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they've just announced the five games. It's funny how it's always five. Like, it doesn't matter if there are only four good games that year. They found another crappy one and gave it something.
Not this year.
But 2018, the five winners were Raiders of the North Sea.
Good job, Sham.
There nice. You go. There's a Spiel des Jahres nominee game there. You've got Photosynthesis from Blue Orange Games, which is an awesome game.
Makes sense.
You've got Ex Libris from Renegade.
Hopefully about those. Is it Dwarven Libraries?
No, Gnomish Librarians.
Gnomish Libraries,
which
yeah.
we still haven't managed to get hold of a copy, but I'm really keen to play that one. Azul, which is like one of the hotnesses. It's
all over everything at the moment, isn't it?
Mainly about, and it's a very puzzly abstract game. And then the only one of the five I hadn't heard of, Constellations, the game of stargazing and the night sky. Now, this is by a little company called Extronaut. I think this is their third game. And the ones before were basically you had to build a rocket and launch it into space. Literally, like it was very much about the science and the physics and the...
Like High Frontier sort of thing.
Yeah, but even more so.
So
you and your family could go and work out how many pounds of fuel do we need to load aboard this rocket and therefore how much food can we take? Very, very fact-oriented, very science-oriented. So, again, more of that puzzly element. But four of the five are actually really, really, really good games. So there's certainly a shift there. And you can see from the last 3 years, Blue Orange has had a game in there. So clearly they discovered that, oh, if we take gamers along and let people play them,
we can put a sticker on our box.
That's right.
Yep. Bezier games
yep. have now got, you know, four or five, almost one a year. Renegade, again, you know, they had Clank last year. So, and World's Fair from 2016 was another Renegade. So it's sort of like these publishing houses are discovering this event and how to get the game out there. Now, what do you get if you win?
A sticker.
They send you a pack of 500 stickers.
There you go.
You can stick on your games. You
have 500, that's
yep.
all.
Yep.
That's going to
But you do hand. You do also get the computer digitally thingy
go.
Version that you can print yourself and stick on your games. That but they do send you 500 for each for the game. You don't win any money, but, it, you know, it's very much a marketing exercise in smart people might play these games.
Yeah, it's also a good way to turn off the general everyday family that see that and go, probably wouldn't be able to play that with the kids then.
Well, this, you know, it's such an interesting thing when you look back and say Flux, or even Time's Up got it in the year 2000, you know, apples to apples. Like, can you imagine the top 2% of IQ sitting around having fun playing apples to apples?
Well, I think like most people before the... Before like 2009, people were just kind of grasping at straws when it came to any kind of board games and stuff. So clearly the Mensa people were no different.
Well, what I do like, though, is that the games have clearly gone down the path of strategy and not luck. There's no dice-based games there where it's just all chance. The, you know, and especially you look at the Bezier games. And Suburbia still to this day is a game that I will sit down yeah. and play. And I prefer it over Castles of Mad King Ludwig. Well,
I like both.
Yeah. So I appreciate that they are transitioning towards the more skill Euro-style games. I mean, you look at Azul, you look at Photosynthesis, you look at Raiders of the North Sea. All of those, again, are all skill-based. There is not just the element of chance, which is, you know, you haven't, yeah. you don't say Yahtzee on these lists, no. do you, where you've got, you know, a fistful of dice and just a bit of luck going your way.
Oh, hang on, let me look back.
Yeah?
No.
There you go. So these Mensa people, it might be something good. I mean, I think they're doing a good job in getting more of the tabletop world out there into the highfalutin tables of these smarter people than us.
Yeah. Look, I think there is, if you look at those games, even so maybe not Raiders, but Photosynthesis, Azul, and to some extent from what I've read Ex Libris, there is still very much that puzzly element of it's sort of, it's a puzzle to be worked out, and the winner is going to be the person who works it out quickest or works it out more efficiently.
Every one of our games are that.
A lot of them are, yes, you're right, Garth.
You look at any Euro game and it's about getting your engine done faster or more efficiently yep. than anyone yep. else. You go and play a race game and it's about being more efficient than anyone else. You go and play Zombicide, it's more about making sure that the whole team works together better than anyone else.
Of course. But look, I guess the more that there are these media releases and stories getting out into the mainstream market about great games and about, you know, you don't have to be in the top 2% of the IQ of the population to be able to play these games.
I do like how you pointed at me when you said that. Thank you very much. I'm not in the top 2, just the top 10.
Then it's got to be a good thing. And it's got to be a good thing that they're pointing people towards great games. And I think a very similar thing happened in the Origins Awards, in the big the Origins Game Convention in America, where, you know, it used to be about who handed their games to the game organisers early enough to get them out there and played, yeah. and people realised, you know what, that having that sticker on a box is worth nothing if all the latest version of Flux just wins it every year because those guys, because it was voted on by people at the convention,
sure.
so, you know, it's got to be worth something. And I think any awards that are out there have got to be worth something. So that when people see them on the side of a box, it makes them think, oh, this means that that game might be better than that game.
And I think a lot of parents these days
yeah.
are also looking for something that is educational for children. And if they're looking at games and they see Monopoly and they see Mousetrap and they see Photosynthesis and then they see Operation and Photosynthesis has something that says, Mensa Select,
yep.
playing this will make your children smarter. Then I would like to think that parents will factor that into their decision-making.
I remember buying, you guys might have played some Game Right games. Does Game yeah. Right produce Sushi Go?
They do.
I stumbled upon Game Right probably in the early 2000s, played this amazing little game called The Legend of Landlock, which is almost like beginner Carcassonne, where you've got tiles that fit together. And one of the reasons that it stood out to me on the shelf was it had, I can't remember which year, it had the Mensa Select sticker on this, you know, little cutesy cardboard box.
There you go. So you are living proof
there you go.
That Mensa just want to take your money. Even though they're not for profit.
They don't get paid.
Oh, they don't get paid for
no,
this.
There are no licensing fees gotcha. For this.
All right.
You know, you've just got to turn up there with your six copies of the games on there that day.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the Mensa Select winners for 2018. And, of course, it's an American award, so that's why we're not seeing any Australian games being mentioned there. Or maybe, you know, if Australian designers want to get on the plane and go over to that
Raiders
festival.
Raiders is pretty close. It's New Zealand.
Well, it is. Crikey.
Yeah, exactly. I think you should give Shem virtual Australian citizenship.
Well, he's clearly done a really good job then by getting in this list.
There you go. Leon, are you awake still?
Not really, no.
Night shift just really takes it out of you, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And on that cheery note, we will go to another song and then we will come back for a few more shows, a few more minutes of Australia's currently best Australian tabletop podcast, whether or not this episode feels like it or not.
No, do we get a Mensa Select sticker?
No.
Oh, God, no.
I think we get the Dingleberry Award. All right, we'll be back after this song.
Oh, that song was nice and relaxing. That was Chook Race with Pink and Grey on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh this week, as always, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. I was in there earlier this evening, and guess what? Shocking, I know. I bought another D&D book, and I bought a DM screen as well. Which is, you know, a precursor for things to come. But Garth.
Yes.
I hear you've been sitting on some toilets
again. Oh, man. I sit on the toilet nearly every day. But before we get to me and my toilet habits, I just wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to a couple of games that we've been playing this week that are Australian. And one of them's on Kickstarter. And we'll start with that one. It is I Am the Fourth Wall.
Ooh.
So it is by Damien Schneider. And this is a little bit of an asymmetrical Cthulhu horror card game that Mark put in probably his last Kickstarter update. Needless to say, it's one of these games that has just smashed its Kickstarter goal. It's about 300-odd%.
Yeah, it just launched on the day before the show, so we hadn't really had... It'd only been on there a couple of hours. It looked like it was going okay. Now it's almost 300% funded.
Well, exactly. It was going for 13,000. It's made as near as 39,000 as you can get. It plays up to 7 people. It is either fully co-op, where you're playing against the mechanics of the game, or it is a one-versus-many game where one player is playing all the bad elder things and all the other players are playing investigators, basically trying to shut gates, which doesn't sound particularly exciting. I shut a gate every day on my way to home and work. But you're shutting Cthulhu gates... Trying to stop
gates that monsters and demons and ancient old ones come through, Garth. Not your kids.
Now, look, we played it a couple of times, this game. It looks really, really cool. I'm a bit dubious about the playtime. It must be said the box says about 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah,
our game certainly took a little bit longer than that. But it smashed it. It looks really cool. And for the person who's interested, again, in the whole Cthulhu mythos, go and get it, because it's got a lot of the tropes in there. All of the investigators are your standard fare that you'll find in almost all the Cthulhu-based stories, except maybe the waitress on roller skates.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of games that can be fully co-op or one versus many, I don't think. So you've got almost two games in this. Maybe that's why so many people
for a relatively small price as well.
Yeah, and we have seen the... Not the final art, so our version had a lot of placeholder art. But certainly, you know, it's colourful, it's bright, it's easy to get to know. Although, it does have 3 rule books.
Yes.
Which help you point in the right direction when you're playing the different types of games.
I think a good edit would be great on those, because I felt like we had to switch between rule books just to play the one style of game. But anyway, no doubt that'll happen as they spend all that Kickstarter money that they've already earned. And then another game that we were very generously sent is called Curious Humans by Tyler Johnson. Now, I think the name of the company is Icebreaker Games.
Yep,
is that right?
Yes.
Now, that's completely appropriate because Curious Humans is basically a Queensland version of Cards Against Humanity. It has about five different topics, I guess, on the cards. It's basically a game where you're trying to trick your friends, I guess. Everyone's going to start with a hand of seven cards. The seven cards will have seven different questions on them, and it might be, I have sent nudie photos of myself.
Oh, God.
Or I have been arrested. Or I had sex at work. Or I like to drink wine over drinking beer. And you'll play a card face up.
You've had a busy day.
Look, it's Thursday. I've got to prepare for the show. Everyone has two cards, a yes, no, and a yes card and a no card. They'll all play them face down. And what you want is to trick as many of the other players as possible. So when I put down the card that says, I've sent photos of my private bits to the wrong person, and you all went, yeah, of course you did. And I went, nah, I meant to send it to that wrong person.
And then we go, you meant to send it to us.
Exactly.
You bastard.
So look, there is a box full of cards here. There's a couple of special ability cards that can alter the gameplay, but this is kind of like a game that feels like it would be most at home at late teenage years, early 20s, if you're at that kind of place where people don't really know each other too well and you want to just sit down, have a couple of drinks, alcoholic or otherwise, and just have a bit of fun.
Yeah, if you want truth or dare with some structure.
Exactly right.
Kind of like that.
But it must be said that it could also, if you're playing it with partners, get yourself in trouble because there are questions like, I have been arrested.
Yeah.
And if you play that and you're telling the truth and you might not have told your partner that, that could be a bit of a problem.
Because before we met, it's fine.
Well, maybe. Because we certainly did learn potentially a few new things about Leon, did we not, Mark?
Yes, we certainly did.
Now, we certainly won't talk about them on air.
I am an open book of a man.
All right, so should we talk about them on air, Leon?
No.
Come anyway, up to us at BorderCon if anyone's there and ask Leon stuff that he doesn't want to talk about.
Garth, quickly, in the 2 minutes that are remaining, what are the hottest iOS properties as far as board games go at the moment?
Terraforming Mars is one of the hottest, biggest board games out. It is on preview
Isn't
now.
Isn't it, Leon?
Great.
It looks pretty spectacular. It's basically a really honest re-implementation of the board game. A couple of other things I really wanted to shout out is, again, there are the betas out for Scythe online now, which is going to be cool. It's been on Tabletopia for a long, long time, but that is basically a platform to play it against real people. This is the version to play it against AI and see how that all works out. The other one that I've signed up to be a beta tester for, but I haven't got the announcement yet because I only signed up this morning, is Istanbul, one of our favorite games because it is brilliant. I'm really hoping I become a beta tester for this because I want to play the vajizzles out of this game. It is an awesome, really simple, not quite Mancala mechanic, but you've got to control where all your characters are going to in a really sort of sensible way.
It's got the pick them up, drop them off sort of thing.
Advanced Five Tribes, we call it.
Well, yeah.
Ish.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And then, look, there is a Mansions of Madness adventure game that's coming out next year that's not directly tied to the app.
Yeah, because that game already uses an app to drive the game, but now they're bringing out an app without the game, which to me that seems a little bit counterintuitive. Aren't they potentially doing themselves out of sales?
Well, I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but I did see the other day, which I thought was hilarious, was there is a Mansions of Madness video game coming out soon. And do you want? And I saw that and went, that's awesome. Do you want to hear the stupidest thing you've ever heard? It's all single player.
Oh, really?
You're one person controlling like five different people at the same time. You push buttons to flip between the different characters. And
that doesn't sound like the
but how stupid
app game they announced.
How stupid is that?
Yeah. That's very,
because I saw
silly.
That and I went, well, all my friends are going to love playing that online. We're going to have a ball playing that online together.
I seem to remember there was a big Call of Cthulhu video game coming. I remember seeing a teaser trailer, but I haven't heard anything more. So maybe if anyone out there knows about the Call of Cthulhu video game, they could fill us in.
Maybe they all knew too much.
Ooh, that sounds really enticing. Well, look, and on that cheery note,
you've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for
podcasting gold,